The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Gavin Lamb Murphy, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Where in the world are you this morning?
Kind of where's Wally kind of question. I literally, where's Wally? I am currently in Marbella and sitting in the sun. I hope it's not raining in Dublin. I used to hear people saying stuff like that and you'd be like, oh, yeah. But it is, it's beautiful sitting here having breakfast. Yeah,
well, it's good to talk to you because we would have crossed paths down through the
many times.
Yeah, down through the years. And I suppose for people who don't know who you are, you've been a long time off the scene. How would you describe what you were, what you did, or who? Do you know what I'm trying to say here?
Like, give me more espresso.
What was the Gavin Lamb Murphy in back in the day?
I actually can answer it quite simply because a newspaper contacted me recently and said, look, we want to interview you because you were the original influencer. And I was like, no, thank you. So I don't like the influencer thing. I don't understand it so much. So I said no. But I mean, back in sort of the noughties, I suppose.
Yes.
Ireland was going crazy, and everyone was spending money and having fun. And I kind of started, you know, I was working for Social and Personal magazine at the time as the social editor, and I was out and about at parties and blah, blah, blah. And then John Ryan came up to me, and your listeners may know John Ryan. He was the guy who founded VIP with Michael O'Doherty, and also, you know, prominent journalist himself.
Yes.
He approached me at a party one night and just said, look, your life is fascinating. And I was like, really? I mean, all I'm doing is going out. I'm a 21-year-old teenager going out and getting drunk, having fun. I mean, it's nothing that interesting. But we kept meeting, I suppose, as he said, all the right parties. And I decided then, you know, they kept kind of, the media kind of had little jibes here and there going at, you know, this kind of vacuous socialite. And I was like, oh, sounds bad. So I was very good friends with the late Tara Palmer Tomkinson in London, and she was doing the It Girl thing over there, and the Sunday Times newspaper said to me, well, will you do a column for us, the It Boy?
Yeah.
So it just started from that, and I mean, it started out as a bit of fun, and it was all just a bit of, you know, kind of anyone who's in their 20s and is being invited to parties and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, why would you say no? So I actually don't really know. I don't know, an It Boy is, I don't know what it is. I actually don't really know what it is. But I hired a PR firm, and I said, look, it feels like the time is right. People had advised me to just flip it on its head and, you know, give the media what they wanted. Basically, they were kind of trying to wind me up. So I said, well, I'll wind you up back.
Yes.
And it all kind of just spiraled out of it. And also, the late Angela Phelan for The Independent, she used to write the diary on a Sunday. We had an agency who sent out a press release for me kind of saying, you know, I'm available for photo shoots. And this pretty much what all of these influencer people are doing now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we did it, and Ireland kind of this wasn't a thing. You know, I had an agent in London who was managing Tara and Victoria Harvey, Tamara Beckwith, all these people. But for me, it was like, you want to do what? But I had a number of good agents who managed to do it. And all of a sudden, it just turned into a career for, I suppose, famous for being famous.
Yeah.
For you know, but I don't know how to describe it.
No, you're describing it actually very well, because you were of that time in the sense that we were heading towards the tiger having a roar.
And,
but you're describing what sounds like a caricature, like that you kind of almost created. It was a construct of a thing.
Well,
rather
kinda,
than
you're bang on, because I mean, you know, the amount of negativity that came towards me from doing it, like certain people got it, smart people got it, and went, it is funny, you are taking the rip out of it. I mean, you know, but other people, like, they thought it was serious. I one thing that stands out in my mind, I was walking to lunch at Peppler's on the Green there, the restaurant, and I was walking along, and this guy in a pinstripe suit, briefcase, 50 odd years of age, came right towards me. I'm not going to say the word he said, but he just came up to my face, and that was the first actual thing I'd noticed. I was like, my God, I'm actually affecting your life. And people used to come up to me in restaurants and stuff and say, don't ever write about me in your column. And I don't even know who you are. I mean, why would I write about you? So it was a kind of a mixed reaction.
Yeah.
But it was all just a bit of fun. I mean, God, like, how could you tell? I mean, people, I would imagine, in hindsight, people must have been going, well, I'm trying to pay my bills and do my life. As we all were, I wasn't flying around the world on a Learjet. It was just an illusion of that lifestyle. I mean, there was certainly a lot of high-octane partying and stuff, but financially, I mean, we were all in the same boat together. But, I mean, if you were sitting down on a Sunday morning and you were stressing about your work on the Monday morning and how you're going to pay the school fees or whatever you had to do, and there's this guy who's goofing around and, you know, bragging about it, basically, yeah, I could see why it would annoy people. But then again, it's only 10 minutes. You don't have to read these things. You can get on with your day.
Yes,
you
know, of course. Obviously, the parting and all of it took its toll. Did you? And we're going to get back to the point that you emailed us about something. I will get there.
Just for context,
I'm just intrigued to see how you are and where it's all going. But all the parting and everything like that, you've got a great self-awareness. I can hear it in you reflecting on that time. You hit a wall ultimately. How did you do that? And how did you confront...
Well, it was just like, you know, as I've said numerous times, I mean, it was early noughties, and 2003, I just hit a wall, and it's no secret, it's a well-documented fact that I had a cocaine addiction, and I had a problem, and, you know, it just kind of started out as literally a bit of fun, that it didn't end up that way. It kind of controlled my life, and, you know, I think I've said to a number of people assume that likes of taking cocaine is a social drug. But for me, it became the most antisocial. I was the most antisocial socialite imaginable. I would not leave my home. I was paranoid. I was freaked out. The media were picking up on it and writing on it and commenting on it. And then twinned with that, I was starting a career in the UK, and I started doing some, like, I did a disastrous TV show for ITV called Young, Posh and Loaded, where it was just horrific. You know, I was crazy, and I've already apologized for it, although I was told I shouldn't apologize. But I felt, you know, I said things and did things that were not right. And it just spiraled out of control to the point where my family just intervened and I had to go to rehab, quite simply. It was bad. And, you know, you kind of look at people think, oh, cocaine is quite glamorous. But it's not. It's not glamorous. It's stupid. It's expensive. And you're just killing yourself. And some people can manage to do it, and I know, do it at a weekend at a party or a dinner party, and, you know, they don't do it again. I wasn't one of those people. I have an addictive personality. If I go in to buy a pair of shoes, I'll come out with five. You know that way. Yeah. So it's okay. I sit down for coffee in the morning, I have 10. You know,
it's
just the way it is. So, yeah.
But you got out of that. You got out of that corner.
I will. Thank you to my family. And hi, Mum. I told my mum I'd say hello. She's listening.
Of course. Good morning.
She loves you. So I said, you know, my family, just my brother and my mother, just intervened and said, "We have to get you help," because I was collapsing on the street. I was going to parties and I was basically just out of my mind. And, you know, I had some high profile jobs at the time. And I mean, I disrespected the position I was in, I suppose, if you look at it that way. But my other side of it was, there was nothing I could do. I mean, I was out of control. And, you know, the only thing I do look back on and I feel, okay, well, thank God it happened. Thank God I was young when it happened. Rather than, I have friends who have made an awful lot of money, never done anything, and then all of a sudden they hit 45 and they're full on cocaine every night because they have the money to do it, you know. So, as they say, it's God's way of telling you you have too much cash if you're doing cocaine all the time.
Not to diminish what you're saying, Gavin, did you actually fall? It was your fall broken by two huge Brown Thomas bags once.
That's actually true.
Is that a true story?
It is the campest thing in the world.
What happened?
It's so funny. I laugh about it now. I actually say it's funny. I'm sure people are going, it's actually not funny.
But I know what you're saying.
You have to laugh at yourself.
Of course.
So I collapsed twice in a week, quite seriously. I was at a restaurant, Pasta Fresca, which is closed, May Frisbee's old place off Grafton Street. And I had lunch there and I walked out and I just got to Neary's pub. And the grand came up. I hit the deck and I kind of got up. I was okay, but I was, you know, that was a bit strange, and people were kind of running over. And 4 days later, I had left Brian Thomas, and I had two of their big bags, their big suiting bags, but I, you know, just stuffed the big bags then. And I got as far as I lived next to the Marion Hotel at the time, and I got as far as the top of Marion Street, and I went across the street and just boom, banged my head. Now, in fairness, the joke was, you know, the bags. Yves Saint Laurent saved my life, but I mean, you know, it was a bit kind of like, oh my God, you know. Now these two ladies who were American tourists from the Marion Hotel and came over and they helped me up, and they were, you know, but that really was a wake up call. And I went to a doctor, and the doctor just said, you're actually suffering from exhaustion, which then became even funnier, because you were like, exhausted from what? Shopping and going to the Unicorn every day. It's kind of not funny, you know. It's kind of, I need help. And then subsequently, shortly afterwards, I got the help I needed. And it was very tough because, again, when you do something like that and you go, as anybody who has gone through rehab or has actually had any family member do it, it's a very tough road. But also to have the media kind of watching what you're doing. And, you know, I mean, every time I did a TV or radio interview and I was sniffing or touching my nose, they were like,
There he goes again. What's going on?
Yeah. It's like, seriously, you know. But anyway, it's a long time ago. It's not part of my life now. I don't know when none of my circle friends, nobody, you know, I'm... I'm, that's it, I live in Spain, and I'm running. Actually, just to change this quickly, yeah, for your listeners, you were saying about picking up plastic. In Marbella, we have a team every morning. I sound like I'm such a local in Marbella. I've only been here since summer. But I jog every morning, and I met these Swedish guys, and they said, oh, no, come with us. We go plogging. I was like,
no, what is
plogging? Is you run on the beach or on your park or on your street,
you
and you actually
plastic?
Pick up plastic as you go. And it sounds kind of like basic, but it's a bloody good workout because you're bending down, you're picking
yeah
up. So you, yeah, it's a really, people in Ireland need to do it. It's a great way
great
to get
idea
people involved in a plogging. It's a Swedish thing, so yeah.
Okay, but anyway, we'll spread the word. We spread.
Yeah,
the...
do. It's a good to read, and it's actually kind of it's fun. But afterwards, you're especially here in 30 odd degrees, trying to do it hot.
Hot.
But
did you?
Yeah, but my lifestyle is different. So.
No, it's a totally different lifestyle now, but very dare I say it, wholesome. Why did you leave Ireland? Did you say I've had enough, or did you? Was it something
well, no,
else?
I've kind of always lived in and out of Ireland. I've lived in Rome and I've lived in London and other parts of Italy. And my partner is Italian and we live in Monte Carlo most of the time. But I decided I was here for Easter. Basically, I adore Ireland. There's nothing I don't love about it. I mean, things I'm missing terribly are the flower sellers in Grafton Street. I used to have so much fun with them in the morning. They'd slag me off for what I was wearing. It's that kind of banter, you know.
Yes.
I used to go every Saturday morning to Moore Street, down to Henry Street, all around there, and buy my veg and all that. People used to laugh. You do what? I said, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, I lived on Fitzwilliam Square, so I mean, I was in the middle of the city. So you go all over the city when you live in the city.
Yeah.
I miss the banter. I miss the fun. I miss a decent pint of Guinness. I love Guinness. And but I just, you know, I just, for me, Ireland, just apart from the weather, I mean, I found myself not suffering from depression, but just kind of, oh, I can't do this anymore. You know, it is very different when you wake up and the sky is blue. I know it's obvious, but it is. The weather really does affect your mood and your... let's say, I had a plan to do... I used to run on Stephen's Green every morning. I do 10 laps at the park, and it's such a, like, you know, a pretty serious run.
Mm-hmm.
But you wake up and you're ready to go, and you look at the window, and it's freezing and it's raining. I was like, oh, forget it.
But when you were here recently, for example, are you, and that's 2019, and you've described the peak of the tiger crazy. What are you seeing now when you walk through Grafton Street or wherever?
That's what I was saying to your researcher today. I said, look, I have, because of where I live, I was surrounded by, I suppose, one of the richest neighbourhoods in Ireland. And I just find it all very aggressive. And I don't mean physically aggressive. I think people, and you know, as my mum said to me yesterday, she said, you cannot judge what people are doing. Let them have fun. I said, I'm not saying people can't have fun, because it's from the man who can't stop having fun.
Yeah.
But there's a difference. I mean, Dublin in the Celtic Tiger, there was a homeless problem. There was always the same issues. But they were not as prominent and as serious as they are now.
Mm.
I mean, I, as I said to you, living, I'd walk my dog on the canal or whatever, and I'd see houses, 6-7 million on one side. And there's tents in front of them with family living. It's not news. Everyone knows this.
Sure.
But for me, it was so disturbing. It was like, how can this juxtaposition of what is happening? You know, it's like, it's out of control. And for me, I then would find, okay, you have that, which is so awful to see it and so upsetting to see it. Because you see, I saw a woman with little kids. She was clearly working and she was getting out of a tent and going to wherever she was going to work. I swear to God, your heart was just... And then you look across the road and there's a 191 Mercedes and a Porsche and a house that's worth 10 million. It's just crazy.
Yeah. It's a tale of two cities, isn't it? Yeah.
It's a tale of two cities on one street.
Yes.
You know, but
yeah.
I basically then, I found, you know, I'd go downtown around Grafton Street and people shopping, spending money. Like, you know, I don't know if it's because we went through it, our generation went through it, and we kind of went, oh, Jesus, afterwards. It was kind of scary. I mean, rich or poor, everybody got a rap on the knuckles. And to see people just going in and spending thousands and thousands on, I can actually say it, even though I collapsed on Yves Saint Laurent bag, on crap. It's all crap. Because when I moved out of my house in Ireland, I had Gucci, Dolce, and endless. My brother was roaring laughing, going, none of it's even worn. And I was like, it's all crap. That's like, what did I, wasting money? As if wearing a Gucci jacket is going to change your life.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
That's quite an epiphany for you, who was the Gucci boy, the Yves
Saint
Laurent.
Well, I'm not going to be funny. I'm sitting here wearing Prada, but I mean, you know,
Jesus, nothing changes.
Yeah,
really.
I know, but it's old Prada. It's old.
Oh, no, that's okay. when you see the youngsters spending that money on the clothes and the shoes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was you when you were their age.
Yeah.
So why can you be in a position? And this isn't, you know, accusatory. It's just curious.
You know, yeah.
Why should you be in a position to say, guys, it's mad?
Well, simply because, I mean, you need to, it's the old thing, always live within your means.
Mm.
And I mean, I'm not going to say these people can't afford this, whatever. I mean, it's up to them, up to everybody what they do with their money. But I mean, when you realise one minute you're in spending €2,000-3,000 on jackets and jeans, whatever, and the next the economy goes bump, and that €2,000 or €3,000. And also, the other problem we have, as we're all aware of, is young people in Dublin or across Ireland are probably going, I'd love to get my own gaff, but I can't because there's no rental. So what am I doing? I'm working.
Yeah.
There's only some, but you know, and it's all very well. People say, "Oh, I'm going to save," but I mean, everybody needs a trade. Everybody needs to go and do stuff. And I think, like the likes of Instagram and stuff, it's so prominent. Like people wearing these clothes, You've got to remember one thing: people wearing these clothes, most of them, including myself back then, were getting the stuff for free.
Yeah.
So you know, I don't. You cannot tell people what to do, and I certainly wouldn't, because if somebody told me what to do, I'd tell them where to go. But I think you just need to look at stuff and go, do I actually need, can I justify spending €1,000 on a pair of trainers? But what, is it going to change your life? No.
Well,
just your bank balance.
Yeah, that's for sure. Your dog is called Henry, is that right?
My dog is called Henry.
Your dog is called Henry.
That's a country album.
It does sound like the song. and you emailed us about Henry because, you know,
I was kind of let down a little bit. I rescued Henry. Clondalkin Animal Rescue, who a friend of mine, Jenny, basically 5 years ago, put him up on Facebook and said, this little chap is going to be at the end of the week, basically, if nobody wants him. So I had a plan. I wanted to get two dachshunds, and I was like, you know, kind of looking around to find a breeder and blah, blah. But then I saw Henry, and I was like, oh, God, stop. And he just kept popping up on the screen. I was like, stop. So I just said, okay, you know what? I'll take him, for God's sake, he's gorgeous, I'll take him. So he arrived to my house, we had him 5 years, great fun, he became King Henry around Fitzwilliam Square, everyone, he was in the Unicorn, he was in the Marriott Hotel, he was everywhere, everyone knew him, he was a famous little fellow around Baggot Street. But I then was moving, and I said, okay, well, what do I do? How do I get him out with me? So I had to go to the vet, and the vet said, you know, get the passport, get the chip, all that stuff done. And he recommended a chap called Dean Lowe to me and said, you need to speak to Dean because he is the only guy we recommend that you use. So they gave me a number for a company. I contacted the company and said, no, Dean isn't here, but I'll help you. So they were very helpful. But in the end, they said, look, there's a problem. When I went to pay the bill, they said there is a problem because there's a heat embargo across Portugal and Spain, which basically means realistically, if temperature goes above 29 degrees, which... let's face it, it does every day in Spain during the summer. Sure. The airport will not accept animals. Now, Aer Lingus ship, but they don't actually ship. They allow a freight company to put their freight onto the Aer Lingus flight. So it's nothing to do with Aer Lingus. They will, no, they were very kind and pleasant about it all, but they said, it's not us. You need to contact a freight company who'll do it for you. So I contacted them. I'm leaving in like 3 days. House is packed up. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God. So I had a bit of a panic and I was like, what am I going to do? You know who your friends are when they won't take your dog for 8 weeks. I'm only joking. But I mean, I do know who my real friend is. This wonderful woman who's actually quite well known in horsey circles called Maeve Butterley, who lived in the Knolls. She's originally from Malahide. She runs a small, very, very good. They look after dogs. It's called luxury dog livery. But it's kind of, they don't put them on leads. They just let them run around. And it's all very, you know, in my home kind of thing. So she stepped forward and she said, Gab, I'll take him. And within 48 hours, Henry was packed up, shipped off. And I was packed up and shipped off the following day. And it was very stressful because, you know, moving house is stressful, moving country is more stressful. But then your dog was, But anyway, let's just say we made up for it in the Aer Lingus lounge. Like, you know, got through it, no problem. But I got to Marbella and I kept checking and checking and checking. And then the Sun newspaper picked up on the story.
Yeah.
And they ran it as a piece just to kind of, you know, fun, like a summer piece. Gavin's dog stuck out. And this guy, Dean, who I've been trying to find, I was so impressed. He got up off his ass and made the phone call and contacted the paper and said, look, I'll do it for him. Get him to call me.
Yeah.
Now, I was dubious. I was like, I knew who he was, but I was like, how could everybody else be telling me no and categorically no, do not contact us again, we'll contact you kind of thing. But this guy is saying he can. And he said to me, because I know what I'm doing and I can do it, let me do it. And I was like, oh, God. And my brother, Alan, was here for a couple of weeks ago, and he said to me, look, you have to do it. Like, Maeve needed to do other stuff. She said, I've had your dog for the summer and we had a plan. So fair is fair. So I said, okay, we'll take the punt and we'll go for it. So Henry has arrived. Henry Pinger. Everything is great.
And
yeah,
it's amazing if somebody just got their act together to say, listen,
well,
I can,
this
we can
guy,
fix that for
well,
you.
Dean basically is, he, his company is called Pet Express Transport. Yeah. And he is in partnership with Speedlink, the freight company.
And
he just knows
it.
What he's doing. And he just kind of, I kind of think, God, this guy, I don't know if I trust him. He's a bit too confident. But his confidence. Yeah, he did it.
There's a lot of text coming in, and it's an interesting one from Julie, who said, I grew up in the Gavin Lamb era. And I always got the impression, she says, that there was a level of loneliness in Gavin's life, and I could see it was going to come crashing down. The media tore him apart unnecessarily. I felt so sorry for him. A nice guy, made out to be a right jerk. But it's lovely to hear you, Gavin, and I hope you're well.
Thank you so much. That's so sweet.
Yeah, nice
that
comment.
Is very sweet.
I think that would reflect the vibe, generally speaking. Gavin, it's been great to talk to you. Sorry I have to
great
screw
to talk to you. I hopefully will see you in Donoghue's over Christmas for a pint.
You better believe
I will be home.
You know where I'll be, down the back.
Absolutely.
And I hope your mum is fighting fit and doing well.
Oh, she's great. She's probably sitting, she's out in Malahide, probably looking out at the sea, drinking her coffee.
Good
so
on
I'll give her a call.
Yeah. Great to talk to you, Gavin. I'm glad
care.
Life's been
thanks,
good to you.
Frank.
Mind yourself. Gavin Lamb Murphy is bidding us farewell there. And it's a salutary tale for our times in many regards. 51551 is the text number.